breaking news to bring you on TalkSport.
You've been listening to Windrush 75.
I've got someone here that would like to say hello.
That is one that I will definitely give away for the Prince of Wales. Oh, there you go.
The Radio Academy Festival 2024. Impact amplified.
Hello and welcome to a Radio Festival 2024 special of the Radio Academy podcast. I'm Sean Thorne and this is the third of three special episodes bringing you insights from this year's Radio Festival.
The Radio Academy Festival is such a highlight of the year.
I mean, what I've seen so far has been incredible. The speakers have been incredible.
Let's welcome to the stage winner of the Arias Best Music Entertainment Show Radio 2, Scott Mills.
You can't kill off radio, and that's why I love the Radio Festival.
You can listen to any of these special episodes in any order that you like, and I think there's wisdom and advice in all three of these episodes that's pretty timeless. So do come back to them and share them with anyone who may find the conversations helpful. On this episode, we'll be hearing from the ARIA Gold winners for Best Music Breakfast Show, Boogie and Arlene, executive development producer at Goalhanger, Nicole Logan, managing editor at BBC Radio 5 Live, Julie Cullen. We're also going to be talking grassroots podcasting with Lizzie Pollitt from Acast. And also at the festival, we hosted the first ever live episode of the Quiet Riot podcast, and we're going to have a chat to the team behind that show. First up, we're back in the warm golden glow of the Royal College of Physicians Treasures Room. Perfect place to be chatting to our ARIA Gold winners. And Ben Coley chats to Best Music Breakfast Show winners, Arlene and Boogie.
It's Ben Coley for the Radio Academy Festival podcast, and I'm joined by Arlene and Boogie from Fourth One Breakfast, who won the Best Music Breakfast Show at the ARIAs, which is a crazy category to get an award in, never mind gold. What are your top tips, tricks, hacks for creating a breakfast show that has an impact for an audience?
Well, first of all, I would like to thank you for giving me top billing for a change.
Yeah, it's Boogie and Arlene, come on.
Okay, alphabetically, it should be Arlene and Boogie. But
that was my thoughts, actually, yeah, alphabetically.
But I'm not offended.
From my perspective, I think the thing that really connects with an audience is honesty. And if you can be really open and honest about what's going on in your life and about stuff that connects with the audience, that makes a massive difference. So I think in terms of content, the stuff that really flies and works really well with our audience in particular is normal, mundane stuff, the stuff that everybody has to deal with on a daily basis, you know, and it you kind of go, yeah, I'm feeling like that, or I've done that.
It's relatable.
It is relatable, and that's really important. It's finding the stuff that means something to the audience that makes the difference.
Yeah, I think another key part of it is longevity, and it really is, and it can't be sort of overstated. We've been doing the show together for 16 years. I've been on Fourth One for 21 years on the breakfast show. And, you know, that kind of heritage, you can't buy that. Yeah. And that you can't fake it either. You have to let it grow. And actually, for presenters, there's not much you can do about that. You've got to find a job that you love and stick at it and hope that the bosses stick with you. And we've had quite a few bosses over the years, and we've been very lucky that every time somebody's come in, they've thought, okay, this is a good show, we want to keep it. But, you know, at any point, that could have been, you know, somebody could come in and say, right, I don't like that show. I want to do something else, more music or whatever. And we'd be back at square one, you know. So longevity is really key to building a real trust with the audience and a connectivity, because they know you inside out. You know, people know things about me that I've forgotten about myself. Do you know what I mean? We've had things like going in our lives, we've had divorce, you know, we've had health issues. I've got Crohn's disease, which is the least sexy thing in the world to talk about on the radio. But, you know, people understand that. I had an operation, and, you know, you talk about it all. You got to talk about everything. But you can't get to that stage too quickly. And if you try to rush it, it wouldn't feel right. You've got to slowly build up the trust, and then eventually you get to the point where you can say anything and you've got the credit with the audience to take them on the ride with you, you know?
So, Boogie and Arlene, got the order right. The theme for the Radio Academy Festival this year is Impact, or Impact Amplified. Who's a presenter, or is there a show that's had a lasting impact on you that you've used as inspiration for your own presenting, for your own show?
No one is springing to mind right now, but I do listen to a lot of radio and a lot of talk radio.
Sure.
And so it's stuff that It's the type of show that I'm listening to and I'm so engaged that I forget what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Those are the shows I love. And I'm always fascinated by how they've managed to create that. And usually it's because they're completely themselves and they're very natural and happy about being themselves. And those are the people I engage with. So if I can bring anything to the fourth one table, it's hopefully just bringing what I'm about and talking to people in an honest way, really.
Chris Evans, Radio 1.
Legend.
1990s. That show was unmissable. Every day, you had to be there from the start till the very end. I was early 20s when that show was at its peak, and I was late for work almost every day because I couldn't leave it. Because the one thing that always springs to my mind, that one day he was going to make Holly... I mean, this dates the story a little bit. He was going to make Holly take her top off on the radio, right? There was no social media, there was no cameras, there was nothing. But he was asking her to take her top off, and it was ridiculous. But I couldn't leave it. I had to find out if she was going to do it, you know. And so that kind of engagement, that kind of I cannot go until I find out what it is or what's going to happen next. So that for the kind of not specifics of the content, but the feel of it, and also. Legend Steve Wright. When Steve was on the radio, you knew that everything in the world was okay, and you can't. And that again,
it's that voice of trust, isn't it?
It was built over decades and decades and decades. And some people may have thought it was a bit cheesy at times, but by the end, when he his last couple of years on Radio 2, you know, it's like, Steve's on, everything's okay.
For a lot of, I'm sure, a lot of budding presenters, a lot of new presenters that are here, how important are events like the Radio Academy Festival for connecting, for inspiration?
I think it's vitally important to have events like this, because for young people trying to get into radio, there's fewer jobs now. So it's really important to make those connections in every way possible. So coming to events like this, trying to network, listen to talks, listen to people who've had years of experience, and hopefully you'll be able to take little bits of inspiration away with you and use that going forward to get your sort of foot in the door. So I think it's really important to have.
Boogie?
Yeah, totally agree. There's so few opportunities now. You know, back in the day, we had stations, local stations in every market that had six or seven local shows every day. And so there's hundreds of jobs. And now there's like two, three over the whole country or network, you know, getting in front of people, just saying hi. What I would say to any young person hoping to get into presenting is like, it might be harder, but it's not impossible. And you've got to keep plugging away because it's absolutely the best job in the world. And if you get to a level like, you know, we're at doing a regular show for so many years, it's the best fun. You get paid to do your hobby.
Now, to sum up those who haven't heard the show, and they should have heard the show, how would you sum up the show in three words?
Oh, goodness.
Fun.
Fun, yeah, it's always the first word that comes
honest
to mind.
Honest.
Yeah. Local.
Local, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I heard the Aria's entry, and the three words I would go for is love, mm-hmm. axes, and Fondo.
Oh, really?
Chris in Glasgow, what does your partner do for you, Chris?
Every Friday night, she'll take the kids away so I can play on the decks.
So you can play on the decks?
On the decks.
Are you a DJ?
Yeah. Bedroom DJ.
And so your wife takes the kids away for the night. Where does she go?
Our mum's and our sister's.
Our mum's?
Give me a couple of hours, peace.
What's her name, Chris?
Gillian.
Okay, well, Gillian.
Gillian, okay.
She lets me play with my decks. She goes out and has sex. That's some old way. She's gone right to mother's again.
We're now off to the festival stage, where we're going to be talking to Nicole Logan, who is the executive development producer at Goalhanger. She's going to be chatting to Pineapple Productions' Juliet Nichols.
Tell me some of the highlights of that session that we just saw you in. There are so many. There are so many amazing kind of points takeaway.
I've just come out of hosting the Goalhanger panel on building long-lasting partnerships with A-list talent. So it was all about managing high-stakes relationships with high-profile hosts. So I was joined by Jack Davenport, who's the co-founder of Goalhanger, Amy Bennett, who's the co-founder and director of Colour It In Studios, Rhianna Coleman, who is the head of podcast for YMU, and Steph McGovern, broadcast journalist and host of The Rest Is Money. I think some of my particular highlights were Steph really speaking into building trust with her production team, whether that's based on data, giving relationships time and being given time to process feedback. I think that really spoke to me directly, who can sometimes be very much go, go, go. But, you know, talent, hosts, presenters, that they're humans. And so sometimes they just need a little bit of time when they're receiving difficult pieces of information or new pieces of information. Rhianna really spoke to the shifting ambitions of talent, how more and more talent want to be seen to be producing shows, not just one particular media. And that's definitely how we work at GoHanger. We don't even call what we make podcasts. We call them shows because they might end up on someone's television. They might end up on someone's phone. It's they might watch it. They might listen to it. They might work out to it. I mean, it's so different how people consume the brand. And we really lean into that. And then Amy really spoke to building evolving relationships with high profile talent over time. So someone like Jamsey Panova, who she's been working with for years and years and years and has done everything with her, as being co-producers together, to be producing linear radio together, to producing various podcasts. So it was incredibly varied, actually, the learning, but they were they're still things that I will take with me.
Yeah, you had a lovely, lovely panel of people there with so many different insights. And what kind of impact were you kind of trying to have on the audience that are here today? Because there's also a varied kind of audience, isn't there? People from all kinds of different audio walks of life. What was the aim for you?
That's an excellent question.
Or what kind of impact do you feel like you had?
I would say my intention going into... So I produced and hosted the panel. And my intention going in was to demystify demystify talent producer, talent network, talent publishing relationships. Because in perfect honesty, when I've been a producer for years, and often there can be this line or this veil between the production company, the network and the talent. And one of the things I found most refreshing about joining GoHanger is that we are the same team. Presenters come in to the office and sit on the sofa and send their emails and take their calls. You know, the team play cricket. So the producer of The Rest Is History goes and plays cricket with Tom and Dominic. You know, they go, I was sat with Izzy, who is one of our production managers, talking about going for dinner in Italy with Gary Lineker. Like, there is no difference. There is no difference for the production team and the talent. And I found that learning. So I joined GoHanger really recently, and I found that learning particularly impressive and particularly, almost revolutionary in how normal it is, if that makes sense. So Jack said, there's no magic wand, there's no magic code. We give the talent time, we look after them, we treat them like people, and because of that we build these great relationships. And so I really wanted to in some way communicate that, to make healthier, long-lasting relationships across the industry, and hopefully we helped do that.
Definitely, I fully agree. Presenters need to be one of the team, just like anybody else. That's
exactly.
The whole point,
yeah.
And they're able to kind of relax and let themselves go in that way.
Hopefully. I've also heard some real horror stories. So I've definitely had a moment where I've had people say, you know, I'm so relieved to get to do this with you. I'm so relieved that that's how you talk to us. I'm so relieved that's how you treat us. And it just feels, you know, not necessarily boo-hoo, tiny violin for someone getting paid lots and lots of money. But I think it's not always, we're not always talking about the breakfast presenter or the biggest, you know, politics podcast in the country. Sometimes we're talking about like your local radio station or your community radio station presenter, that learning is still very much applicable to them as well.
Yeah, fully. Okay, one final question. Events like today, you were talking about how important the audience is and, you know, how important kind of like connecting is. How important are events like this, that seeing people in real life? You know, the radio festival is a really important part of a lot of people's calendars. So What are your feelings on that?
I mean, yeah, I really, really rate Aradhana and Chris North, and I think they have really brought the festival into this exciting, dynamic space, which feels aggressively inclusive. And I don't mean that in a very sort of tried D&I way. I literally mean that you can have, like I've seen Mohit here, who's the director of speech for Radio 4, or no, for the BBC, sorry, let me try that again. I've seen Mohit here, who's the director of speech for the entire BBC. And I've also seen friends that are in community radio. And everyone is there together, talking together, attending the same panels, writing the same notes. I sat next to another commissioner from Radio 4 in a panel for Sylvie Carlos on decolonizing audio, and he was taking notes. And I think that peer-to-peer learning, that peer-to-peer sharing is what will make our industry more dynamic. And Chris said something when we were thinking about what the panel should be. And he said, it's just really about the love of the medium. And I think it's really nice to find time to Chris North said to me when we were planning this panel, it's all for the love of the medium. And I think that's really special and really reflected in the energy here.
Next up is the Impact Stage. This is a really great chat for those of you who are trying to organically grow your own podcasts independently. Sharon Bodu is going to be catching up with Lizzie Pollitt from Acast.
So from your point of view, how do small podcasters set themselves up for impact and growth?
Yeah, so I wish there was one easy answer to how to grow a podcast, because there isn't. I think that it's about being consistent, first of all. So defining a strategy, whether that's around, you know, your social media or around PR or around the content itself, and being very consistent with it. I think some of the best sort of like podcasts which have grown big from what you might say grassroots have become that successful because they've just been very dedicated, very consistent, and they put the hard work in. So it's probably not the answer everyone wants to hear, but it's the answer.
Great. So do you have any encouraging words or tips for struggling small podcasters who are trying to be consistent, but because they have a small team or because it's just them doing the podcast, they are kind of getting discouraged by the whole process? Do you have any encouraging words for them?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, even if you have one listener, don't forget that that is adding value. You know, I've had a podcast before which got very few listens, but there was one friend who's like, oh, I look forward to every week. And I thought, well, if that's making that person's week. But obviously that's not what everyone wants here, because, you know, people do want to grow and they want to build an audience. They also want to make money from it. I think it's also about the podcast industry itself is very community minded, and there are loads of people out there in the same position as you. So do get involved, you know, meet other people, network, go to events or go to masterclasses, meetups, because you'll realise there are other people with the same challenges that you can learn from as well. I think that's what's quite unique about podcasting. It is very warm and open in that way.
And are there any other tips for people who want to set themselves up to attract big networks like the ones you work for, so they can attract you to onboard them onto your network to help them monetize or elevate their podcast?
Yeah, so I mean, with Acast ourselves, anyone can have their podcast with Acast. But if you're looking for that kind of support, maybe you want to join a network like some of the networks that are here today. I think, first of all, it's about being, well, the first thing is to just focus on growing your audience, and everything else should follow, because that should just be your sole focus first. You know, thinking about marketing strategy, thinking about, you know, have I got the best cover art to represent my show? Have I written the best descriptions for SEO purposes? I think if you focus on just growing the listeners first, then the rest will come slightly more easily. And I think, again, it's just about pitching yourself. It's about getting out there, talking to people about your show, marketing yourself as much as possible. I think those would be my main tips.
And talking about networking for events like this, it can be a bit intimidating to just go up to people and talk to them. Is there an easier way, or is there some other way that would make it not as intimidating as it looks?
Well, you're asking the wrong person, because I'll talk to anyone. But I think generally, like, you know, as I said, podcasting industry, people are generally very welcoming. So I think you just got to bite the bullet and go and ask that question of the person, you know, and also maybe do your research. You know, if you know, for example, that network has just signed a big podcast, maybe that might be your opening. Just get to know who the people are, get to know what the different players are, the different roles are. But yeah, just do it.
Thank you so much.
We're back to the festival stage now, and we're back with Juliet Nichols in our lovely little podcast garden that we'd made at the festival. And in the lovely, glorious sunshine, Juliet is going to be chatting to BBC Five Live managing editor Julie Cullen.
If you wouldn't mind, then, tell me a little bit about what you just did and maybe some of the highlights from you and from others, if you prefer.
Yeah, that was really interesting, I thought, because Tina chaired it brilliantly. So it was quite a range of experiences and views. And I have to say, I was a little bit nervous about being on a panel with Times Radio because, as came out in the discussion, we have just signed Matt Chorley, who was formerly of that parish. But I think we managed to keep it on the civilised side. And as I explained to Alexander, Matt was the one who chased Five Live. It wasn't the other way around. So, yeah, it was really interesting. And I think it is... it's an important conversation to have about speech radio, isn't it? Because at one stage, it did look like podcasts were going to shut down live radio. But what we've discovered at Five Live is that people want it to be live. They want their news to be immediate. They want their news to be... they want people to analyse the news with them and for them. They want to be able to phone up and say what they think about the news. And then... podcasts for us have been a huge area of growth because it's a different kind of audience. It's a different kind of conversation on a podcast. You can't interact with it. And so we have we've provided new different things for the audience that it hasn't taken the audience away. If anything, it's grown the audience.
In terms of, I don't know if you did think about this at the time, but the impact on the audience who are here today, you're saying it's a lot of industry people, different parts of the industry.
Yeah.
Did you have a kind of intention for where you wanted to go
with
the conversation in terms of the impact and the way people feel walking away?
Well, I wanted to land the point, and I didn't actually in the session, so I'm very disappointed in myself. But I think what makes Five Live so different is it's the tone of voice of the network. It's really conversational. It's really interactive. But I do think one of the most important parts of the history of Five Live and its evolution is the fact that Five Live's the only network that exists outside London. And that gives us a different relationship with the audience because we live amongst different communities and we see things differently. And it's awful. It makes it sound like London's another country. It isn't. I lived in London for 20 years. I love it. But, you know, the fact that there's a news and sport network that's based outside London gives us an entirely different perspective on the news and on the way people are reacting to the news.
Fully, fully agree. And finally, the radio festival. Why are events like this important? Getting people together, you know, all in one place, all in real life.
Oh my God, they're so important. I had a conversation earlier with Sam Moy, my very good friend, who's head of Six Music, about AI. And she told me about the session that she'd been to on AI. And there was a really striking image that came out of that she said, you know, the image of the hammer, where he said you can use this to either destroy things or to build things. And that's the way you need to employ AI. I wasn't at the session, but that's a takeaway that I've got via somebody else. And it's an opportunity to step away from the day-to-day and think about, right, okay, what's happening in the next 12 months? What's happened in the previous 12 months? To reflect and to look forward, but also, most importantly, to meet those colleagues that you never see and catch up with them.
How important is social media and those shareable clips as a strategy when it comes to impact, Judy?
Huge. I mean, everybody has seen Matt Chorley on the roller coaster with Ed Davey this week. It's hilarious. And it's immediate because it is immediate. You don't have to ring the marketing team and say, right, well, we need a trailer, we need this. They're doing it as they're making the programme. You know, it's the researchers that work on the programme that make those videos. So the digital team's crucial to disseminating that. Those sections of the programme that we know are going to attract those younger audiences who that kind of thing will appeal to. It's like, oh, that's funny. I'm going to tune in and find out what that's all about. So, yeah, digital's huge for us and our audience.
So as well as all the talks, networking opportunities and free pizza and wine, we also had a live podcast recording at this year's radio festival. Politics podcast Quiet Riot had their first ever live show, and Sharon Beaudoux caught up with the Quiet Riot crew for a post-episode chat.
So in the midst of discussing politics, yes, there's so many nuances that comes with it. And in today's episode, you really talked about some of the nuances that comes with doing politics. So my question is, how do we discuss those nuances without it seeming hopeless? Because, you know, on the right side, it's not looking good. On the left side, it's not looking good. And so the situation can feel hopeless. So how do we navigate that type of situation?
Okay, so the first thing we have to do is accept that social media is not real life. Because I think a lot of the hopelessness comes from what people see on social media. So I was interviewing an anthropologist a couple of weeks ago, and he was saying that when you and I have a conversation like we are now, it's a collaborative process. We look at each other's reaction, right? We are driving to a result together. We may not agree, but we will come to understand each other's positions. On social media, you can drop the most toxic thing and just walk away, which you can't do in real life, right? Or you can enter a conversation of people you don't know, say something horrible, like I said, just go away again, or demand people talk to you. So I think a lot of the hopelessness and the upset and the toxicity really comes from people believing that social media is real life. Social media is not real life. Any more than Instagram. You know, the photos of the dishes that you see on Instagram, they're not real life, right? Some people cook them and present them like that to take a photo. But not all their meals are like that. They occasionally have like a sandwich from a train station, right? But on Instagram, you only see the dressed up beauty. And similarly, I think on Facebook and X, and to a certain extent Threads, you see the worst of politics. You see the most confrontational and the most toxic. Real politics happens around the dinner table, where what I would advise everyone to do is to ask questions. Don't confront. Don't say, you're wrong, I'm right. Just ask, why do you think that? Why do you believe that? Where did you see this? You know, it's sometimes really easy to get people to gain nuance around their opinions simply by letting them question the structure of where they got it from and what it means. And, you know, without actually saying, I am a moral person and you are a wicked person because you're on the right and I'm on the left, or the other way around, which is what we tend to do a lot. The reason why that matters, I think, is because there is a wicked side to politics. And the wicked side to politics is populism. The easy answers that say, whatever you want, you can have it if only there were fewer immigrants, if only there were fewer Asian people. If, you know, there's some easy solution that explains why your life is not like the lives that you see on Instagram, which are not real anyway. And in order to battle that, because we are seeing this in France, in Germany, you know, in America, we're seeing it everywhere. I think to battle that, we're going to have to bring together a group of reasonable people who believe in rationalism, who believe in evidence, that are from both the left and the right and the center. So we have to basically make a coalition of the reasonable to battle against the unreasonable. Not just the unreasonable, the unreason, actually. Because unreasonable people you can convince to change their mind. Unreason, like the design philosophy that says, I don't care what the facts are, that you cannot have in your public life, actually. It's poisonous.
Okay, so finally, yeah, with this being your first live, yeah, recorded episode, yay, what do you want people to take away from when they listen to this episode? What's the one thing you want them to take away from this episode?
That politics doesn't have to be cold and dry and boring. That politics can be warm and human and funny. That's it.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
A massive thank you to all the speakers and session producers who helped us get these interviews together. And a big thank you to Ben Coley, Juliet Nichols, Sharon Bodu, Adam Skin, and Shannon Hackwood for all their help on this podcast and putting it together at the festival. To those guys, absolutely top draw team. And as always, thank you most of all for listening. If you haven't been to the Radio Festival before, genuinely, I've said this after every episode, but I really do recommend going to check it out and the other Radio Academy events. Real great, perfect opportunity for networking and connecting with some real talented people across our industry. If you haven't listened to the first two episodes yet, do go and have a little look at them. There's a lovely chat with Trevor Nelson, Scott Mills, Adrian Durham, and loads and loads and loads more. And do subscribe as well to this podcast, because this podcast is a great way to get more insight from talent inside our industry and also to hear about upcoming networking and development events. I've been Sean Thorne. This has been a lovely time bringing you these three special episodes. I hope you've enjoyed them, and I really hope you've found them useful, and I'll see you soon.